Let's welcome MK Chavez, Heather June Gibbons. Questions from the audience, just shout it out.
I have a question for MK. Being an Oakland-based writer and being involved in public health and social justice, does it weigh on you and affect your creativity seeing the explosion of the housing crisis and the populations of the tent camps getting larger and there not being the amount of political weight behind helping and being put resources into stopping that? Has that had an effect on your writing?
I mean, I think it comes into my writing, and I certainly notice it every day. And, you know, writers, right? I feel like when we're at our best, we're observing. And I think when you're observing, it's really hard not to, not to suffer a little bit alongside. I mean, I think it's, you know, it's really devastating. I remember watching the encampments grow right when you come off of the grand exit off of 980. And it just was growing and growing. And a friend was driving me. I wasn't driving. So we came off the freeway, and there was this body across, like, into one of the lanes. And I remember for a moment, I didn't know if, I knew it was a body, something that had been hit. And I had this moment of, you know, just like, oh my God, it's a person. And then it was a deer. And so I went from it's a person to it's a deer to feeling like crying and then feeling really confused about, like, I was freaked out that it was a person. Then I was freaked out it was a deer. Then I cried. And, you know, and I thought, you know, and then I walked into work. And then I had to kind of go about my duties and be like this person who was so kind of removed. And I think as writers, I feel like sometimes, you know, I feel like I cycled through that experience all day long. And I ended up writing about it. But, you know, it's impossible, I feel like, to not have all of the stuff that's happening permeate, and I feel really grateful to be being able to have a way to exercise that and to be able to also record it, because it seemed like a month and a half, 2 months later, it was like the encampment was just gone. Mm-hmm. It was gone. Like, I, you know, was driving the same route and it was just gone. And I wondered, where did the people go? I mean, there were a lot of people. It wasn't just, you know, and there were signs of people had put signs up that said families live here. You know, and so I feel like, yes, it affects it. I don't know that I would say it's cathartic. I think sometimes somewhat comforting to be able to put it somewhere, to be able to name it so that it doesn't get ignored. Because I think for me, that's the most disturbing. And I maybe perhaps one of the bigger motivations behind why I write is... I have to externalize it. It has to be made real because it's so surreal.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Just a quick comment and then a question for both of us. MK, you had a line that really stood out for me where you said, I believe it was the one about the deep forest poem, where you said, even if I was born here 1,000 times, I still wouldn't be... I think it was, I still wouldn't consider myself American. I'm just being from a family of first generation and the whole diaspora feel. And, I don't know, it just really stood out for me. So thank you for that line. And just to add on to the previous question, what is the duty or the responsibility of the poet? Because it sounded like your world kind of motivates you to write, but does that kind of put blinders on you? Then poets can only write about kind of what they observe and what they experience. Basically, my question for both poets is, what is the duty and what is the responsibility of today's poet? And is there a duty or responsibility for today's poet?
How do you feel? Yeah.
Well, I mean, I think there is there's a duty of being a human in today's world, and poets are humans, so we have to do things too. I mean, I feel like in terms of social justice and that kind of work, sometimes I personally, like I work, like right now I'm a poet at a juvenile detention center. I come in there once a week and I work with public high schools, and I feel like my work, aside from direct political stuff, tends to go in that direction around teaching. But there are times where I feel like, you know, when I feel the need to do something and respond to something that's happening, that sometimes I don't want to write. I want to actually go and do something, or I want to pick up the phone, which I hate talking on the phone, and call, you know, call a representative or figure out what's happening, educate myself, and be able to figure out like what actions could be taken, you know. And then there are other times when, I mean, I feel like it always comes out in the work, right? Anyone who does creative work, as MK was saying, you know, part of what we do is to observe, and maybe also to filter and percolate and find a way of recording and transforming what we observe, how we take in the world, in a way that feels meaningful to us and hopefully to others as well.
I love that, that, you know, being, that our job is to be human, which I feel, you know, like we shouldn't have to say that. And yet I feel like it feels so appropriate to kind of like, oh, the memo is, oh, hey, don't forget to be human and compassionate. It's interesting to hear so much of the discourse now where I feel like that is a question as to whether or not that should be the primary thing that's driving the conversation, is whether compassion and humanity is optional. You know, I think that for me, I feel like the responsibility for, I mean, I guess I don't feel comfortable saying like the responsibility for all writers, but I feel like my responsibility feels like it is to building community. And that means that I am in conversation with other artists and other humans. But I guess that, you know, I feel like I can write about everything and anything, but I want to be able to be in relationship to other people. And I want my art to be able to be connected and connecting. So I feel like, it's a question. I feel like it's hard for me to feel like anything that I write is not political because of my life experience and where I'm coming from. And I can only write from that place. So everything's kind of tainted or permeated by that. And so I feel like I end up, you know, if I end up writing about my experience of being taken into the woods and lost as a little girl, it's impossible for you know, my experience as a first generation to not slip in there. So, you know, I'm trying to find ways in which I can explore what that means within the context of writing it. And I guess, I don't know, responsibility, I feel like I would go with Heather's, that, you know, there are multiple ways to be a writer and to be in community, and some of us do it by, you know, doing service, to being in service to the community, and there's a bunch of different ways to be in service to the community. You know, I think about Tongo, many of you must have gotten exposed to Tongo, and I think about Tongo's work and his political work, and I love how he weaves in the world. Like, he's very much found his way of being able to weave in and out with his writing. His writing is extremely political, but he also does political work, and I think that differs from person to person. And I think we need all of it. We need people who are teaching here. And I think, and who are, you know, who have a wide, you know, who have an ability to be able to address the issues and make them relevant in the classroom, so that those of us who are not experiencing, you know, the the traumas of this life can at least begin to understand them. Or, you know, I feel like understanding one another is definitely something that we're needing to be working on right now. So I think, you know, whether we're doing it at Juvenile Hall, here at SF State, or, you know, like on the front lines of a protest, and I think we need everybody kind of just activated to find their own way.
Sorry. First of all, both of you, amazing work. Seeing you read it the way you did it, bring it to life. A question for Heather is, did you notice when you were accumulating all these poems and writing them, this strain of the theme of what I observed to be kind of like saying fuck you to normative desire? Did you like see that theme and then want to, you know, merge those poems together or the other way around? And then my question for MK, it would be, from what I observed from your childhood kind of trauma, if you will, do you see when you see yourself writing about childhood, does it bring you to a therapeutic like hearing place or a, you know, different
You want to take yours first?
Sure. Let's see, does it bring me to a... I mean, I feel like writing is cathartic. I mean, I guess, yeah, I suppose so. I feel like I don't enter it with that intent, but I feel like it does happen. But I'm not from the kind of traditional therapeutic construct. I think, you know, one of the best parts of being able to write is to, around trauma, is to be able to write, to step back and write about it in an observational way, and to understand it from outside of it, not in it. And so I feel like I actually am not really talking about my trauma specifically as much as I am talking about the traumas that happen to us all, kind of the universal traumas as opposed to my own personal. And I think one of the side effects of traumatic experience that ends up being a negative experience is isolation. So I think in that process, because I'm examining trauma as a common experience as opposed to this happened to me, it is therapeutic in that sense, in that, you know, I'm joining this other realm of experience, and it does become an experience as opposed to a solitary, you know, personal thing.
Okay, so it was
sorry.
It was a great question. I'm just trying to remember exactly. Were you referring to just the specific group of poems or just generally like the fuck you to normative desire?
Okay. I've heard some of your other work and I have noticed just like the way you write is kind of, I don't know, debunked or dissected, you know, normative desire, and it's interesting, or at least the interpretation I have of it. And I just was wondering if you like noticed that theme and then that's how you compile the poems together for chapbooks or books.
Yeah, well, I love that that interpretation of that theme. I think that's definitely there. I don't. I mean, I think the way it, for me, the way it works, like some poets write in series, or they write like a project. They have a project-based approach, where they're working with operating within a field of possibility that they have set out and exploring within that. I would really like to be able to work that way. It sounds really cool. I tend to just write stuff and then see after I have amassed a group of poems to then start to see step back and take in what's happening and try and find through lines. And then sometimes I don't really know what they are. The Sore Songs one, that lent, once I started to write those, then I did start to more consciously explore different, like, facets or aspects of desire and okay. trying to get into the weird corners of it. Yeah.
That's all right. Awesome.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Well, I have two questions. I want the nice question. I'm asking the nice question because the other one was like kind of more like praxis based. Like, how do you get into writing? Like, okay, I'll just ask the practice. How does research? I had to write it down because I was gonna forget this question. How does research inform both of your writings, and how do you balance having facts and poems while also still maintaining like that abstract art?
Mm-hmm. Do you want to go first?
Sure. that's a great question. I do a lot of research all the time, not really scholarly research. Like, I read things online, and I read articles, you know, like long form journalistic articles, but I'm not like, you know, reading real scientific studies and things like that usually. But I think that I'm very interested in information and how we perceive information and how we make sense of it or we're not able to make sense of it, how we make connections between things, and interested in the way that captivated by the way that we have so much information available to us, but it's often piled, you know, meaningless things are piled on top of meaningful things, and it's so much energy just to figure out how to find the good information and, you know, what is bullshit and what's the real story about something, or is there a real story? And and I also just, I really like language that, you know, I like technical language. I don't use it in everyday life, but I like the sound of exploring, like, the meanings of, you know, the scientific names for things, or researching, like, why something happens in weather, or, you know, that kind of stuff, like, it will sometimes send me to an observation that I don't think I would have come to otherwise, even though the poem often isn't ultimately about weather, or, you know. Yeah, so I love research.
Me too.
And the second part was about how do you balance it with other things? I mean, I rarely feel like the information overwhelms the poem, but I've written some things, like some essays and things that I felt like were too heavy on information, and they're not finished, you know, because I haven't figured out that balance yet. It's a tough thing to figure out how much information to include and how much to trust your reader. Or just let what's there resonate without needing to answer all the questions.
Yeah. It is why I'm having a torrid affair with the lyric essay.
Yeah.
I love the lyric essay, and I love it because it gives me more room to approach that balance between the music of language and the weight of fact.
Yeah.
And that, for me, that's my favorite reading material. Mm. Like, that's how I like to take in reading. Like, when I find a book that's has musicality to it but is giving me factual information, I'm kind of in heaven. If it's got some history, I'm even more in heaven. But, you know, so the lyric essay has been just magical for me. And I was introduced to it, and we've been having a torrid affair now for quite some time. I become a little obsessed with different things. I mean, I'll read stuff online, but I also will become interested in a subject, and then I'll seek out real, you know, odd scholarly articles, because scholarly articles are so odd. And can be so great with, like, the most like information that you just aren't really going to use, but then, you know, you read it and 3 years later you're like writing something and you're like, there's that thing I read in that weird scholarly article, and it's perfect for what you're working on. So, you know, I like to collect information in that regard. And I spend time, I love glossaries. I love glossaries and I love Latin. And and I love things, you know, like I was looking at the sky one day and, you know, a long time ago, and I was looking at a cloud and I thought, what a oddly shaped cloud. And I thought, I bet it has a name. So I have been trying to teach my, you know, trying to memorize the names of different clouds. And yes. Well, there's many cumulus clouds.
Brain, I'm just like, it sounds like cumulus cloud. Yeah. It didn't make any sense.
Well, you know, when we were having, you know, the multiple fires, there were some clouds. If you looked at the sky, and they're like these really oddly shaped clouds, and they were pyrocumulus clouds. And I was like, yes. I was like, oh my god, I finally get to say that word. So I was just calling friends. I was like, hi, did you look at the sky today? So you're either going to put it in a poem, or, you know, or a lyric essay, or you're going to bug your friends. They're like, hey, can I tell you the name of clouds? So, you know, I think it's great.
Thank you.
I was wondering what the title of that one reading you read was, when you referred to women in Mexico marrying trees.
Mm-hmm. It's called Deforestation.
Is that one still in progress, or is that?
It is. Yeah. It is.
That's, oh, wow.
Yeah, I feel like it is still growing.
Okay.
It's an interesting thing because it feels a little alive to me in that sense, which it's my companion right now.
I had a question about the lyric essay. I guess maybe like two part. One was it being a lyric essay. Like, how do you see your practice in poetry sort of present there? Like, what makes it lyric and not just sort of an essay for you? And I guess that might be, you were talking about the sort of musicality of language earlier. And then you mentioned wanting to be in communication with other people, and I was curious how you think the lyric essay either enables you to be more in communication with people than, say, like poetry does, or if you feel like there's a difference in the way poetry versus the lyric essay allows you to communicate with like a general audience.
Wow, that's a good question. Huh.
I have to think of the essay as like a more accessible format, I guess. So that's why I was kind of curious.
I feel like the lyric essay has a little bit more room. I mean, it's just a longer form. So you're connecting with the reader for a longer period. Yeah, it's a more sustained moment. You know, poems are moments, right? And you're together for a moment and you connect. And then you might, you know, like you read the next poem and you might connect again really quickly, but or not. You know, I mean, definitely can feel when I'm reading, I can feel which poems really connect with the audience and which connect less. You could just, it's a feeling from the audience. And with the lyric essay, and I can see how this could do a really, really wrong. Like if your lyric essay really doesn't connect with people and you're up there reading for 5 minutes and everybody's like, oh God. But I also feel like sometimes with the subjects that I'm finding it very useful for subjects that are complex, because I feel like I feel freer to use more narrative language.
Mm-hmm.
And that narrative language, I think, almost acts like a breath from the musicality and the more abstract, the more kind of emotion-based sections of the lyric essay. So you can, you know, talk about something that's less accessible because it's so abstract, but it's also emotion-based, and then counter that, balance that out with something that's narrative where people can get a little bit of a break.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And my thing with poems is that I love poetry. It's my first love. And I have sometimes felt with my own work that, you know, like I'll have to select what to read and what not to read, like one after another, because I feel like we're all kind of dizzy after I've read.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I have to balance the types of poems that I read together, because I don't want us all to be like a dizzy mess of not, you know, not being able to anchor. I guess for me, just because the poetry that where I explore mental health, my mother, you know, diaspora, all that, are kind of on the heavier side, I would say. And so it's nice to be able to have tools to be able to explore heavy things in different ways, you know, different. Mm-hmm. And how do you feel about it?
Yeah, I'm very interested in this because, and we should talk more about lyric essays, because I've been writing lyric essays after finishing this book and getting the edits done. I think in part I just really needed to try to write in a different form, but I also found that I had all of these things I wanted to write about, and I had started to write poems, and the poems became overburdened with information, and I wanted to be able to tell more, you mm-hmm. know, not just the showing and the singing. Mm-hmm. I really wanted, and it wasn't so much about the figurative language or the reaching for the connections or the leaps or things or those, you know, the startling statement. It was really about just having the room to actually talk mm-hmm. and not feel like I had to sing so much, you know, or whatever. Like, and getting, delving into the history of things, mm-hmm. of objects and the relationship between the things we invent and art and, you know, so many different things. I think it allows for more strands to come together.
Yeah.
Yeah. We haven't had a tour affair yet, but we're flirting really hard, so we'll see.
So this is a question for both of you. As writers that go ahead and sell their work and get to go ahead and move that all over the world, all over the country, this, that, and the other, what are some, you usually don't get a chance to go ahead and say to a crowded room, what are some of the things that you want people to take away from, or just some thoughts that you had while you were writing that, hey, this is kind of how I'm feeling, or some thoughts that if people took this away from it, that'd be cool. This is kind of, I'm on the same page as this. This is how I feel. What would you like? What are some different trains of thought that you would like people to go away from after reading your newest works or your most current works?
That one's hard. I think that's a really hard question. You go first.
I did. I did a reading once, and it was just a funny little reading in Berkeley, and just a much, much older crowd, like a kind of across the board, and like much older in that, like a couple people fell asleep. Like they actually bring folks from the senior center, and you know, and some of them are older, and you know, have mobility issues. And anyway, it was a lovely reading. And it was the end of the night. People were so just wonderful. And I was leaving, and this woman was like, hey. And, you know, I thought maybe I'd forgotten something. I went back, and she said, you know, I really loved your work. I feel like going home and having sex with my husband.
And I said, that's so awesome.
And I was like, I'm like, okay. You know, and I thought, well, my work here is done. You know, I just like was smiling about it for a really long time because I just kind of thought, okay, that really worked for that person, you know? And then I have to say that with Mother Morphosis, my publisher asked for after accepting Dear Animal. And, you know, we were taking a walk and talking about the vision for Dear Animal and the fact that he was accepting it. And I was really excited. And he said, oh, and do you have work? We want to put out this collection of chapbooks, and I'd like your chapbook to be part of that as kind of a buildup for Dear Animal. Do you have work for a chapbook? And, you know, I'm kind of hearing all the different advice that people have given me over the years, and I'm like, I have no idea if I have enough work. And I'm like, mm-hmm, I do, mm-hmm, I do. And I was like, oh my God. And so, you know, I ran home and I looked at what I did have, and it was, I mean, it Mother Morphosis wanted to be born. The poems were there. They weren't completely finished. And so it was really the next 3 weeks were really about wrapping them up and really finishing them. And it was such a fast pace that I lost my self-consciousness. And I just wrote them, you know, and I didn't have the editor in my head telling me, oh, is this really what you want to share with the world? Oh, that's too much to share with someone. So there was a lot of lack of self-consciousness around what I was sharing, or around my experiences with mental health issues, my mother's schizophrenia, et cetera. And I am so glad for that. I'm so glad that that happened, because on the night of the release, I thought, you know, he was getting ready to introduce me, and I thought, oh my God. Those are poems about my mother. Those are poems about this, like, incredibly painful experience, and one that certainly has carried a lot of shame and stigma, certainly when I was young. And then I got up and read them. And every time I've read from Mother Morphosis, I've had some experience where somebody's come up to me and said, I'm so glad to hear that. My mother, my uncle, my brother, mm-hmm. my best friend, something. And I think that for me, it is a beautiful moment when that happens, when people can connect with your work. How they connect with it, whether it makes them want to go home and have sex with their husband, fantastic.
Or somebody else's husband.
Well, I'm not gonna, you know what, I feel like that a dangerous territory, because I could be, I don't know, is there some, like, legal responsibility? but, you know, yeah, I guess that it's, again, back to the connection piece mm-hmm. of, like, whatever you take from it is great. I just want to see if it can connect. And if it gives you anything, that's fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, I'm really delighting in, because this book has only been out for a few months, I think I'm in the initial stage of just really delighting in hearing the, you know, how it does connect, or what people think something's about, or what it makes them think of, or and just having that, having the chance to connect in that way, and often discovering things that, you know, perhaps I didn't intend or weren't at the forefront for me when I was writing it, but that's something that, you know, really, you know, reached a reader, or it made them think about something that, you know, I wasn't thinking about. But I feel like that's actually where the writing takes on its own life, and you know, is released from not being about, like, the experience or feeling I had when writing it, or the intent I had for it. Mm-hmm. Or even what I think that it's about now that I have written it, but that it's the life that it now has is what readers bring to it, and that's really interesting, mm-hmm. and it's always new. It's humbling and really interesting to just hear what others are getting out of it. Connection, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Sword in the fact that empathy is, like, the highest virtue that humans can have, is to, like, connect with each other as if they're yourself. But it also, if you can't control it, can be crippling. If you absorb other people's experience and emotions constantly around you, it can be so exhausting and draining. I'm thinking of a friend who's a social worker for a long time and had to completely change career track. Separated herself from social justice issues and things like that because she became so overwhelmed and in emotional pain. And as a poet and a social justice worker, I feel like that's a really interesting cross-section that, you know, being a poet is having a level of observation that's compassionate towards whatever your subject is, you're really analyzing it. And I'm wondering if you have insight as to ways, like practical ways, not even necessarily for other poets, but just for people who want to be involved and do good work and help other people, but don't also then want to completely lose themselves to sadness and tragedy around them.
Mm. I'll let you go first on this one.
I think that's an ongoing balancing act, and you know, balance in that finding balance is constantly moving one direction or another direction and teetering on the verge of collapse, right? I feel like for me personally, I have to take sort of breaks from certain kinds of things, certain kinds of work, or even if they're very short, just make sure that I'm doing something, just spending like time with my little daughter and just focusing on that, or you know, just ways that we have of you know, community, family, of counterbalancing other narratives and other you know, horrific things that are happening. But the issue of empathy, I think that empathy is, in some ways, you know, empathy is an act of imagination, and those artists are, you know, are engaged in empathy, and this kind of radical empathy could be so powerful, but to your point, can also be debilitating, you know, if it's not put into some kind of balance. But yeah, I don't think I have an answer to that. I think that's a question I'm asking all the time. And the ways that I find, you know, things that sustain me or, you know, provide a necessary balance of, you know, a soothing, a salve, a loveliness, respite, you know, change. And sometimes it's a little thing. But yeah, I wish I had like a good system for that. Make a lot of money. Make a lot of people happy.
Well, I guess I've been working in the nonprofit industrial complex for for a really long time. Like a really long time. I guess I'm approaching 30 years in some capacity or another. And I started doing direct services, and I knew that I would not be able to do direct services forever, so I kind of planned for that. So I feel like some practicality is useful around you just knowing what your limits are, like really knowing yourself first when you go into doing it, and humility. You know, I kind of feel like empathy is good, but I think we all own our own feelings and our own experiences. And when I write certain pieces, certain poetry of mine does describe or talk about certain traumatic events. But what I'm trying to share with you is not the traumatic event. I don't want you to have to experience something I experienced that was traumatic. That would be terrible. But I'm trying to share something else. I'm trying to share, like, you know, the kernel, the treasure of, you know, of coming out of that, like the art that comes out of that, not the actual experience. And I feel like there is a kind of a version of that for doing the work, you know, of like when you're doing social work or something like that, where I feel like sometimes people get really confused and they start to experience what the person is experiencing. Like they get in too close. And so then they're going through, and then they begin to suffer from vicarious trauma, and then they can't last. Mm-hmm. Because if you're going through the experience with people, you're one person going through multiple experiences happening to multiple people around you, and that's not sustainable. One person can experience their own experiences and overcome them and come through them in whatever way is going to be right for them. So I do feel like it is about humility and remembering, you know, you are, you know, this is me, this is Heather, you know. Like we can have, you know, empathy for one another, but we are two separate beings. And we can witness without actually taking, you know, I also feel like, I guess I say humility because I think it's a matter of respect. Mm-hmm. And I feel like people are entitled to their experience. We don't have to get into their experience with them. I think it's actually much more respectful to be the person who can be there as witness and you know, just be there. Mm-hmm. That's what people, I mean, that's, like, I know from my own personal experience, that is not the part that I want to be sharing. Like, I do not want people to have to go through something I experienced. That's one time's enough. Hope that answers your question.
Yeah. Thank you.
That might be it, yeah.
All right.
Thank you.
So much. Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Yeah.